The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network.
Welcome, welcome. Hi, everybody. This is Tiffany subbing for Vina, who is somewhere in deep hiding preparing for the summit this weekend. If you don't know what I'm talking about, we'll get to that a little bit later. But if you're near a computer, you can check out the nationalsummit.com. And it starts this Thursday, and I'm super excited about it. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I've got an exciting guest today, and some people say taxes, like, how could that be exciting? But I think it's super exciting. So with me is Scott Ellsworth of Ellsworth CPA. He is our resident CPA and a chief tax strategist. I just gave him a new,
there you go.
Yeah, I know, right? And he's also a fellow investor. And today we're going to be talking about strategy and taxes and the like. And I want to remind you, this is a live show, so you can give us a call. 877-772-9658 is the number, or email us vinaradio@gmail.com. So we're standing by. So let's get to it. Scott, did I forget anything about your grand introduction? Or
no,
so
you did just a great job, Tiffany.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about what year-end tax moves every investor should know. So, all right, folks out there, we're heading into the final stretch. And if you're a real estate investor, this is the prime time for you to get your tax strategy in shape. So let's kick things off with a big picture. So, Scott, what are the most important things you think a real estate investor should be thinking about in terms of taxes before the end of the year?
You know, I think primarily the first thing, you've got to have records, good records. Most people don't. I shouldn't say most people do. I guess I'm generalizing too much. Mm. A lot of people don't. They just hate it. It's like sticking bamboo under their fingernails. They just don't want to do it. They like doing deals and, you know, they love real estate. Who loves accounting? But you need the accounting piece to get to the tax piece. So I think that is important. And that's going to provide you the basis of trying to figure out where you are and what you need to do, because you really want to decide if you need to defer income or increase expenses this year, or whether you want to move the income into this year and defer the expenses. That just depends what bracket you're going to be in, where you're going to end up on the scale, and that is really, really important, and most people do not know that.
I would say it sounds very complicated. I come from an old banking background and collections, and you said good records, and we used to always tell people when they were notating the accounts, if it's not in the notes, it didn't happen. So you're talking about that good record keeping. Guys, there's something to be said about that. So that was your first low hanging fruit and tip from Scott. Good record keeping. Get yourself some good stuff to keep good records. So can you break down the importance of timing? You talked about that income, about maybe moving something to this year or keeping it for, or moving it to next year or keeping it for this year. So in the income and expense shifting, like.
Let's talk a little bit about that in regards to, I mean, there are things that are low hanging fruit. You said the word low hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that are low hanging fruit. You can pay deductible expenses this year that maybe are advanced payments for stuff next year. Now, you can't go overboard on it, but again, you can pay things a little bit early. If you've got some work coming up, get it paid for. Don't prepay vendors. We're not talking about that, but go ahead and pay for that work. Buy equipment. There's equipment that you would potentially need to buy. Let's say you're going to buy a truck, or for flippers, they might have a dump trailer Well, buy it this year. You get 100% bonus depreciation. In other words, you get to write it all off first year, and that is really, really gonna can save you money. Mileage. A lot of people forget about mileage. I mean, I can't tell you how many clients we'd come up with who said, "Oh, I didn't track my miles." Mm-hmm. I'm like, mm-hmm. miles is a big deal. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of money. I don't memorize the numbers, but I think it's 70 cents a mile.
I think you're right.
This year, that's a lot of money. If you drive 20,000 miles, that's a $14,000 tax deduction.
It's big.
I mean, it's huge. So you definitely want to do that. And I think along with equipment, it's like improvements. Consider doing the improvements now instead of waiting until January on that property you have that is in service. Those are big things that can do it. And when we talk about the timing, I mean, that really is, for instance, if this year I'm going to be in the 32% tax bracket, if I'm going to be in that tax bracket, and next year I'll be in a lower bracket, right? Then I want to move my income to next year. Mm-hmm. Why do I want to pay 32 when I can pay 24?
Absolutely not. Right.
So those are big things. And then there are and the same thing can go in reverse, right? If I'm in a low bracket next year, I'm in a high bracket this year. I'm sorry, switch that.
Switch
reverse.
It. Reverse.
I'm that Willy Wonka thing. So if the income bracket is going to be much higher next year, I probably want my income in this year's so I can pay a lower tax bracket. And that goes for a lot of the strategies out there. There's a lot of things we would be doing. We'll talk about a little more about that as we go. But timing is really important. But to know where you are is key to that timing. So that is really, really a big issue because you don't know. Do you have your records? Do you know what your profit is? Each of the things. You might have 25 rental properties and you do flips. Do you know where you are right now? Can you sit down with your CPA, your tax professional, enrolled agent, and actually be going through that and saying, here's where I am. Let's estimate the taxes and figure out what I need to do. Because then at least I know, do I need to do it this year or is next year not going to be as good? Now, next year, what is that? That's going to be an estimate, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, but I do have a general idea based on the economy. So I think those are good.
Yeah, and so you've given us a whole lot of information in a very short period of time. So, folks, I would like to tell you that if you like what you're hearing and you do want more of this, Scott is going to be appearing at the National Summit. I think you're talking on Saturday? Is that right?
Saturday morning and Sunday for lunch.
And so what can you share what the topic is going to be with the listeners?
We're going to do a case study on Saturday of regarding cost segregation and how we can, we're going to do a case study that shows somebody who can easily save $25,000 a year. That mm-hmm. can be you. And then on Sunday, we're going to talk about converting IRA accounts, traditional, to Roth at a substantial tax discount.
That's wonderful. So Scott is going to be with us at the summit, and of course, I'm going to be there as well. You want more information on that? It's nationalreasummit.com. So, Scott, this big, beautiful bill thing that everybody's talking about, it's been a lot of buzz about it. And for us investors, like, what does that actually mean? Like, what things have changed for us, like, right off the top that we really should know about? Any deductions or new stuff like that?
So I think the biggest thing for investors, not as much flippers, but it does affect flippers if they're buying equipment, but it's bonus depreciation. So that was set at 100% back in 2018 mm-hmm. through 2022, and then it started dropping. It started going to 23. It was 80%, then 60%. And this year it would have been 40%. And it actually was 40% based on if you buy it before January 19th.
Oh, put it
so
in
hopefully,
service date.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
If you put it in service January 19th and later, you're going to be good. But what bonus depreciation is that it's a way that you can buy an asset, and we'll talk a little bit about that maybe after the break. It is that asset you're buying, and then the tax law permits you to write the whole thing off immediately instead of waiting for 5, 15, or 27 and a half years or 39 years.
And that's a good place for, are we ready? Are we up for a break? Yep. I see a sign. He's flashing it at me. So that means that we need to take a break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. As you heard, this is not Vina. It is Scott and Tiffany today, and we're talking tax and strategy. And if you missed any part of it, we were just wrapping up about some year-end tax moves, and we were talking about the big, beautiful bill and what changes it has for us as investors. Again, remind you, this is a live show. You can give us a buzz at 877-772-9658 if you just have a burning question about year-end strategy or taxes. But Scott, a little more about this big, beautiful bill thing. We were talking about this bonus depreciation and writing off like a whole lot of money. I'm like super interested in that. Are there any other credits or any other incentives that maybe come along with that you'd like to tell the listeners about today?
So I think besides bonus, I think one of the big things that people don't really talk about much is opportunity zones. Opportunity zones were created back in with the Tax Act of 2017 for 2018, and that really encourages investments in depressed areas. Mm-hmm. And so it was a opportunity zones really were a very temporary benefit, very temporary. But what they did with the new tax law, the one big beautiful bill, is they went ahead and made that permanent, and it resets every 10 years. So the areas that qualify will reset every 10 years based on how they are economically. In other words, in theory, if I invest today in these areas, these opportunity zones, I am going to improve the area, right? Mm-hmm. And then once it's to an area where it's improved, maybe say 10 years from now, they're going to move the opportunity zone to somewhere else. So that's a big thing. But there are a lot of incentives with that. Tax incentives on deferring gain that you've got. It could be stock gain. It could be real estate sales, whatever it might be. But those things, you're going to be able to defer that tax. And what's beautiful, and we don't have time to get into the details, but you defer that gain. You invest in the opportunity zone. There's all sorts of rules and regulations of it. But then once I invest that, if I keep that investment in that opportunity zone, in that fund, for a 10-year period, after that, it never gets taxed. So I now have bought a building, let's say it's in the opportunity zone. The opportunity zone fund has bought a building in the opportunity zone, depreciated it over 10 years, 20 years, even 27 and a half, and they fully depreciated it. You don't have to do that depreciation recapture. Depreciation recapture is the IRS code that says, hey, if you take depreciation, mm-hmm. or you were allowed to take depreciation, it was allowable, you've got to recapture that. Think about a building, right? When we depreciate a building, does it really depreciate?
No.
It doesn't, right?
No.
The IRS knows that. We know that. But they give us a deduction, which we love. But then when we sell it, there are ways to avoid it. But when we sell it, the IRS says, hey, that didn't really depreciate. So we want the deduction back. So a lot of stuff to go into with that. But the opportunity zones are nice because you will never, ever pay tax on that gain.
Wow.
On that new property in the opportunity zone, new or used property in the opportunity zone, as long as you meet certain criteria.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big thing with the one big beautiful bill that I don't think is talked much about. And it really benefited this time. They really put a lot of extra benefits for rural areas. So you've got rural areas, and a lot of the requirements of what you have to do in those areas have been reduced from the other areas, so that it makes it much more an incentive to invest in the rural areas.
All of that sounds really exciting to me. And you're right. We have a lot of information going exchange in our RIAs, and there's not a lot of discussion about opportunity zones. So it would be great to hear more about that. And so, folk, I do know that on December 13th, is that right? You're going to be talking about real estate taxes for dummies, right? So I
think it's the 13th.
Something like that. It's a free class for Cincinnati RIA. You can sign up for that at CincinnatiRIA.com. But I don't know how long it's going to be, but I know those Saturday classes usually a good.
It'll be 6 hours.
6 hours, right?
9 a.m. Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, so you'll be able to take some questions. So if anybody's out there listening and they actually join in for that class, maybe we could cover a little bit more about opportunity zones at that time. So yep. I definitely will be there.
Yeah, we're going to do a. It's going to be a sort of the first half is going to be sort of a basics of taxation. A lot of people don't know what earned income is, passive income. Mm-hmm. Portfolio income, they just don't know those terms and what it means to the investor. And then we're going to go into some advanced tax strategies too.
Nice. I'm excited. I definitely will be there and signed up. And so moving right along in our chat for today, you mentioned earlier flippers. So let's talk about flippers and landlords. And there's a lot of buzz out there right now about what's going on with the maybe not wholesalers market. Mm-hmm. So smart spending strategies, delays. So sometimes it's not just what you do, but it's when you do it, right? So you were talking about purchasing some stuff before year end. When should a person not take year end deductions? Are there times when it's smarter?
Yeah. Than? So you don't really want to, if you've got a, let's say you've got a loss.
Okay.
Let's say I've got a loss. It wasn't a very good year. Something happened. Maybe it's not a real loss. It's a paper loss. But you've got a loss.
Okay, so if Vina does this thing, and I have to interrupt you. Jargon flag, paper loss.
Means like okay. Depreciation is some people call it a paper loss. In other mm-hmm. words, you don't shell cash out of your pocket. Now I did buy a building, right? So I have a hard time saying it's a non cash. I didn't buy the building for $100,000, so I did shell out some money. But those are not immediately cash outlays. That as a loan, you've got things like that. So when you have a loss, so the issue is if I have a loss, if I have more deductions this year, then potentially I don't get the benefit. Now there are some things, loss carryovers, a little more detail in that we would go over at the conference. But if I don't need the deductions mm-hmm. for this year because I'm in a low income tax bracket. Or a zero, then let's defer those to the next year. Again, some things I will be able to do what's called a loss carryover. If I lose money in my business, I can carry it over. But when you get into loss carryovers for a business, you really are getting deduction. You're eating into the smallest of the brackets, right? We talked about I want tax deductions at 32%, mm-hmm. 24%. Do I want deductions at 12% or zero? No, I'd rather have it at the higher bracket. So mm-hmm. I might want to do that. And you can do a lot of things with, you know, delay your closings. Now, if you're going to sell something and you're taking a bath on it, then and maybe I want that into this year, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to move that closing into this year because I'm going to have a loss. But again, if I'm already in a low bracket, then I'm going to move it to the next year. So a lot of that can be. And the equipment is a big, big thing. I mean, let's say I'm a flipper and I buy a dump trailer for $9,000. I can write that all off this year. Let's say I buy a truck, the right size truck. Same thing. I'm going to be able to write that all off this year if I want to.
So you mean that 1500 truck that I think I want to get with because they've got a new one with the computer thing on it and stuff. I might be able to put that in.
I always encourage people though. Make sure there's a business reason to buy that truck. I've had people who their CPA will tell them you got to save money on taxes, buy a new truck. Then they buy a new truck every single year. I'm like, well, what is that? So that's maybe smart. I think it's dumb tax-wise, too.
New truck smell.
Yeah, everybody likes a new truck smell. So I do think that you do that. And think about, I think this goes for flippers and others, think about things you buy that relate to your business. You know, if I'm an Uber driver, that's a little different topic, but if I'm an Uber driver, I am buying sunglasses. I need those to drive, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't think about deducting the sunglasses, but those relate to it. Same thing. If you're a rehabber or a flipper, you're going to find stuff that you buy that you use every day. You know, don't buy that table saw for your personal use. Buy it for your business.
Yeah.
And then you can deduct
that. Thought about tools. Yeah. And this time of year, they have all the nifty new tools coming off.
Yeah, you're going up to Black Friday, aren't you? You're going to buy all those tools. Black Friday.
sounds like my thing. So are we at good? Okay. So I'm learning the cues now. I have a different director here in the radio station with me, but we're going to take a break. Guys, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more tax strategy. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tiffany and Scott today, Real Live Real Estate Investing. And today we're talking about taxes and tax strategy. I don't know about you guys, but those of you who are listening out there, I'm hoping that you've read your pens, because I came in here with papers and questions to ask Scott, but I've taken a lot of notes that I always feel like I get homework from you whenever I listen to any of your stuff. But at any rate, guys, we've got Scott Ellsworth here with us today, and he's talking about strategy and dropping some real tips and dimes here today. So I mentioned earlier that Scott is going to be at the summit on Saturday and Sunday. So if you want more information about that, it's at nationalreisummit.com. And then he's going to be doing a freebie, free 99, guys, on December 13th. It's Real Estate Investing for Dummies. But I heard him say he's going to take questions, and he's going to segment the class between here's the getting started stuff for taxes and strategy, and here's the other stuff. And you can find more information about that at Cincinnati REIA, that's CincinnatiREIA.com. So, Scott, we were talking about the big, beautiful bill and flippers and all kind of stuff. So let's move into maybe one day what I want to do, and that's called retire. I don't know if that's ever going to happen as a real estate investor, but hopeful, wishful thinking, right? So yep. let's zoom out a bit, because the structure really matters. And so how should investors be thinking about retirement accounts in their tax strategy? I think you're going to cover that, right, on Saturday.
Yep. So retirement accounts are a big way to build wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you do have ways you can invest, you can save, you can put stuff, and a guy named John Bowen with Equity Trust is going to be talking about that at the convention. You need to be there. He'll give you a great detail. He's a guy who you can just ask question after question after question, and he'll sit there and answer them for you. He loves it. but you want to take this time to open up accounts, whether it's you could do an IRA. Mm-hmm. I like, for real estate investors, solo 401ks.
Okay.
Now, you have to have earned income for solo 401ks. So you can't just say, I'm going to open up a solo 401k. You have to have some earned income. Earned income is income that you – it's because you're either selling services or you're selling widgets, you know, you're selling items or you're selling that. Those are generally the earned income. Now, it's not earned income, because if you're going to set up your own solo 401k, it's not your W-2 income.
Gotcha.
That is earned income, but that's not going to help you for your separate company. So solo 401k allows you to sock money in potentially as high as $70,000. There are ways to even get more in there, but let's just go with the 70. You can literally be putting $70,000 into that solo 401k and do it all in what they call Roth, meaning that it doesn't help me today. And some people have a problem with this. I want deductions today. But the benefit, so the traditional, mm-hmm. which means it's pre-tax, mm-hmm. that's traditional IRAs, traditional 401k investments, and there's a myriad of others. But then there's also Roth. So Roth, we don't get the tax deduction today, right? So essentially you're sort of paying tax on the seed. But now with a Roth, all the earnings and the money I put in, when I hit retirement age, 60, 59 and a half, 60, I can take that out and I pay no tax at all.
Oh,
all
nice.
The earnings that developed. If I have a traditional IRA or traditional 401k, I got the deduction up front. So, for you know, we can run numbers, but I would say generally the younger you are, the more beneficial, and it's almost a no-brainer you're going to invest in Roth. There are some advanced strategies with doing some different things with that, but for most part, you'll put it into a Roth. I can put potentially $70,000 into a Roth 401k. What can you do with $70,000, right? I could buy a small $60,000 single family that I rent out,
mm-hmm.
and that could produce, if I actually paid cash, and there are lenders who will lend.
Mm-hmm.
You can't guarantee it, but there are lenders that will lend. My goodness, I mean, if my $60,000 house is making me $1,000 a month,
yep,
that's 12 grand return, well, minus expenses, but still. that definitely is a way to grow it. But a lot of that stuff you want to try to do now. There's some contributions can be made after the end of the year. So again, your records tell you how much you can contribute based on your income. By the way, 401ks and IRAs to contribute, you've got to have earned income. So IRAs, it can be your W-2 income, Roth and traditional. 401ks, it needs to be your own business, right? So that is really important on that end to do that. But then I can go ahead, once I've got that money in, I can now invest it and produce tax-free income, potentially.
So let me get this right. And what I'm hearing you say, I think, is I've got this opportunity because I do these widgets or services, so I can do that solo 401k. But even if I don't have my stuff together right now, I still have an opportunity to get in on it for this year after this year? Did I hear you say that?
You do. There are some accounts, like there's an HSA, health savings account. We need to get that set up before year end. We need to have the right insurance in place. So there's a lot of stuff. Here's the other thing. There's a lot of things that you know, it is almost November 1st.
Yes.
You really should have been planning earlier. But you take what you have, right? I'm where I'm at. So let's do that. So I think that's the biggest thing is that those retirement accounts, a lot of them you'll want to set up beforehand for the years, but you'll be able to make contributions to IRAs, HSAs. You can make contributions up to April 15th. 401ks can go longer based on the extension of your return if you want to back that up a little bit.
Yeah, so it's not too late. I mean, I understand it might be a major undertaking for your set bookkeeper or CPA or somebody, but what I'm hearing you say is that there are still a lot of strategies to take advantage of. So, I mean, say you had that big widget sale or something by the end of the year, you still have an opportunity to set some of this stuff up. I know it would be rushing, but it still sounds like a good plan.
You have time to set it up, and it doesn't matter about the size of your account. You can grow a small IRA or a small 401k using alternative assets, right? We're not talking mutual funds, things like that. Those are more traditional investments. We're talking about non-traditional assets that you can invest in that are going to grow. I mean, there are a lot of things. And really at the summit, you are going to hear about the things you can do in there to grow those.
Could we be talking
accounts.
About a note maybe?
Yeah, you can do note. You can lend in it.
Okay.
You can buy real estate. You can even partner with somebody on a flip. there are a ton of things.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I'm excited about. You
mentioned
the summit, and I immediately thought the original note investor, that's Donna Bauer, right? I think she's going to be at the summit. Okay. I have to check both of you out because I have to figure out how to get this thing set up so that I can invest in whatever Donna's teaching us at the summit. It's going to be exciting.
Retirement accounts are a great vehicle to grow your wealth.
Absolutely. So if you had your druthers, what kind of record keeping habits do you wish every investor had year round to make this thing much easier? Because it you have to admit, it sounds daunting to keep all the stuff not in a shoebox.
So I think there's two things. One, you need to have a system.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to say you've got to have software like QuickBooks or any of these other ones that are out there. There's Stessa. There's a bunch of other ones.
Yeah.
There's a myriad of those. My concern, but I think you need to go ahead and pay for one. It costs a little bit of money, but it's a cost of doing business
That's right.
It keeps it up to date. The other thing is, here's the other problem is, a lot of people go and let's say they buy QuickBooks. But they don't want to enter that stuff. They don't want to do it, right? So I recommend hiring somebody. I know that's a little bit of an issue, and I am one who believes that if you're just starting out, that I want you to make money before you spend all your money, right?
Profit first, yeah.
So I definitely want you to make money. So I'm not saying you have to jump right into it, but the software it's well worth the money. Mm-hmm. You're going to save so much time for that little bit of money you're spending every month that it's going to be well worth it. And then if you can't afford to hire somebody, then you're going to need to learn and do it. But you can do that. I mean, it depends how much business you've got going on. But you could be doing, you know, it could be an hour or two a week, and that's it. But if you have a system and it's run, and if I really had my druthers, I would hire somebody who's already skilled at it, knows what they're doing. And I think you need to hire – there are two different people. There's a bookkeeper. That's okay. A person who's recording and keeping your books. And then there is an accountant, somebody who knows where things are supposed to go. So a bookkeeper generally wouldn't, let's say, know. Some of them do. Some bookkeepers do. But how do you record that closing statement when you buy that property? Is it just the net amount? So there are a lot of things that you need to know to properly keep your books for the end of the year. And so your stuff's accurate during the year. I mean, your books are not – I mean, we're talking about taxes, but your books are needed to just know how your business is running.
Right. That's what
I – How do you know how your business is running?
Right.
You can look at your bank statement, but that isn't necessarily – but that can be deceiving.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like you got lots of cash. Well, you're really drowning because there's other – debts that are accruing or whatever those might be.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I mean, so do something, guys. I think that's the take here. I mean, systems do make a difference, and there are a lot of them out there, and you could easily get overwhelmed, but the object is to make sure that you have something to give your bookkeeper or something to give your accountant, and get started and don't be scared about it. And with that, we are at a good spot to take a break, and stay with us, guys. We'll be right back with more. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tiffany and Scott, Real Live Real Estate Investing, and we're talking about taxes today, and we've covered a lot. Boy, if you missed it, this is one that you're going to want to go back and ready your pens and take some notes for some year-end strategy. And we've been talking all about what happened with the Big Beautiful Bill and cost segregation and all these things that I don't know a whole lot about, but Scott is telling us about it. Talking about the summit, I almost forgot to tell all of our listeners out there that are in our Cincinnati area. Of course, next week is our in-person opportunity. The first Thursday of every week, we meet in person at the Holiday Inn out by the IKEA. And it's our big in-person networking meeting. So this one is a great time. We're just doing all things networking. And you can bring a friend. Your first time is free. You can find out more information about that at Cincinnati REIA. That's CincinnatiREIA.com. Scott, looks like we have one brave soul with a question. Do you ready for a question?
You bet.
Okay, so this one's from SK, and it says, hi, TNS. Oh, that's cute. I sometimes do private lending and hold notes as part of my business for myself. Can I put those in a 401k/Roth-interest-income? That makes sense?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is you can put notes in your Roth or your traditional 401k IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ones you currently own, you can't do that. You're just sort of stuck with them where they are. You can't get them in there. But because you can't, the IRA or 401k cannot buy or acquire stuff that you already own.
So retrospective is out of the question.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, but
okay.
You know, it's a great strategy, and that's actually a prime place to put that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
because those are notes, especially if they're long-term notes, right? They're going to build your investments. You don't really do anything with them. They're totally passive. Of course, if they go bad, they're not passive. So, but for the most part, they're passive.
Well, we want them to be performing notes. I know people that buy non-performing, but I'm not brave enough for that.
They can make some money.
Yeah,
doing that.
I know, but that's like riding the big roller coaster.
That's the great thing about this industry. What we do is there is stuff. There are strategies, investment strategies that match everybody's different skill set and risk tolerance,
mm-hmm.
and what they like to do that it fits into their lifestyle. Because I've got people we'll talk to them about strategies to reduce taxes. I'll have a great strategy, but then it doesn't fit their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great strategy, but it just doesn't fit their lifestyle.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure the strategies match what you want and how you want to live.
Totally makes sense. And so he's got a second question here, and it's back to your opportunity zones. He says, you said that they are reclassified every 10 years. Do you lose standing if your investment zone changes?
No, you don't. That's the greatest thing. So when you go in, you're sort of grandfathered in. That's not going to change as long as you keep those investments. And again, a lot of details regarding that. We just literally, we can do a half a day on opportunity zones.
I think we should. I don't think anyone wants to stick around today.
Yeah, not today.
Rainy.
Nope, not going to happen.
Yeah, blanket time, that kind of stuff. So I always think I get, I'm not going to say nervous, so that's probably the wrong word, but I start thinking about this time of year and it's like, oh my God, okay, I'm going to forget something. So what is it that the common things that investors may forget other than mileage? I think you mentioned that when I wrote it down, like on the second page or something, or maybe if somebody was filing and they thought, well, this is going to be a red flag for the IRS. They might take a second look at my return. So let's
talk about that. So one thing I see a lot of investors do that they don't understand. So I'm a flipper.
Okay.
I buy a house in November for $100,000. Okay. And I put $50,000 in it, but it's not done yet. It's not finished. Hasn't been sold. This is a flip, not a rental.
Okay.
Well, they're like, when we go do their tax return, you're not going to deduct the year you bought and rehab that property, because you're gonna record the expenses when you sell it.
Oh,
that's what you're gonna do. So if you're not gonna sell it till 2026, some people think, well, I had so many deductions this year. I spent, you know, $150,000. This is gonna be great for my taxes. Well, no, it isn't. Here's why. One, it is the rules, but it also makes sense. Let's say, for instance, I took that and I had $150,000. In expenses, right? I bought the property and I put 50 in it.
Okay.
And then I deduct them. Let's say I could. I deducted the 150 this year.
Okay, 2025.
Right?
I got you.
Next year, because it was all finished, which wasn't sold yet.
Yep.
Next year, I sell it for 200.
Ooh.
Do I have any deductions for next year?
Nope.
So now I've got 200,000 worth of income and no deductions.
Nothing to take against
so
it.
I can Ooh. Really swing my bracket very high the next year because there's no deductions. So from a practical standpoint, you think you want it, and I know you want to save taxes, but you don't want it. It's going to go with that. The other, but that's also some planning. Get it sold before year end or delay it until later. And if you own rental, if you're a housing provider and you have rental property, a lot of people think, well, I bought this for family in December. It was vacant, all need to be rehabbed.
Right.
And they think they're going to start writing off all this stuff on this poor family the year they bought it. They start writing stuff off when it is placed in service. In other words, when it is ready and being advertised that it's for rent.
Okay.
You got to be careful, because some people are like, well, I'll just stick a sign up and that'll be my method of saying it's in service. So the problem is it needs to be ready. It doesn't have to be rented up. So what I would encourage, you've got 2 months. If you have any of those properties and you want to do let's say a cost segregation, which we talked about, where we take a property and we break it out into all its pieces, because a property is not just a four family building that you bought for $200. It is four sets of cabinets, four sets of flooring. So we do that cost segregation. We componentize it, appreciate the different assets. And when we do that, those shorter life assets, 5 and 15 year, we can write off first year. So that gives you a great planning opportunity, because if I can get that, even if I just get one, once I've got a unit rented, I would argue that you're in service. So if you're in service, get that going. Now I can componentize the different parts of that property, and I can take some very fast deductions with cost segregations, breaking that building down into its components. You are going to probably see between 15% and 25% first of that purchase are going to be able to things you can write off. Like I bought a commercial building back in 2021, was 100% still, and it's 100% now. That was a $1 million building. And when we did a cost segregation on it, we got a first-year deduction of $200,000. That was for – we only put $200,000 up for the loan.
So you got it all back.
So I got – you know, that was all deduction for that amount. And so that's really important if you can do that. But that's the big thing that I think people make a mistake on, or they – I mean, hopefully their tax preparer is going to make sure they understand, but they're not going to see that deduction because it's not in service. So that's sometimes hard for people to understand, and they're, and things are a little bit different. The other thing I see, I've seen people who, you talk about red flags. I've seen people who have, they give me records back when we don't do any much tax prep anymore, but they give me their records. And their business, they said, I had $1,000 in advertising, $600 in rent, $200 in office supplies. Everything ends in a 00.
Yeah, no.
So what I tell them, I hand it back to them, I'm like, you're lying. Now, I guess they could be, but that is going to be a big red flag because nobody has exact expenses that all end in 00. So those are the kind of things, and not matching 1099s. If you get 1099s, for income, you need to make sure your income for that category matches that, because those will be red flags when that'll pull your return. Sometimes just a letter from the IRS saying, hey, you only reported $50,000 and the 1099s you got, say, it's $70,000.
Mm-hmm. Where's the rest? Yeah. Right. That, well, I mean, that in itself is scary. So, you know, so I think we're getting close to the end of our segment here. And so any final thoughts, wrap up about, you know, personal practice, getting help, or strategy that you want to kick out before we leave today?
I think it's just, again, just to reemphasize, cost segregations and bonus appreciation are big for investors, and using those retirement accounts to build the wealth. And then from a practical standpoint, you've got to engage people. You've got to be doing your planning all year long, not just, oh, it's November, I got a plan, because there's a lot of things that you're missing the boat on if you don't start
and
earlier.
That's why people should come and check you out on the 13th, and they should make their way to the summit. That's what I would say.
All right. Well, it's going to be fun. It's 4 days of fun.
It really is.
It is. Good time.
Hey, guys, this is Tiffany and Scott, real life real estate investing. Thank you very much for rocking with us. Happy investing. Take care, and hope to see you at the summit.